Part 4. Chapter 10. Megan Morgan. Megan preferred to wear trousers as a child. She found them to be more comfortable than dresses, and she liked looking like her brother, Mark, who was 3 years older. Megan was born in the 1990s, so wearing trousers should not have caused any problems. But her mother wanted her to look sweet. Apparently, she could only do that by wearing dresses. One Sunday, Megan threw herself on the floor and cried when her mother forced her to wear a horrible pink dress. "There's something wrong with Megan," she heard her mother telling Auntie Sue after lunch. "She doesn't behave like a normal girl, does she? I worry about her." Megan's dad did not help. He came from Malawi and believed everything could be repaired, including his daughter. When her mother was upset that she would not wear a dress, her father would tell her to go upstairs and play with her dolls. Megan did not like playing with her dolls. Her parents wanted her to spend hours dressing them in clothes and playing silly games with them. Megan liked to cut off their hair and arms and take out their eyes with scissors, though that got her sent to bed without anything to eat. The only person who did not care that Megan did not like to wear dresses or play with dolls was Gigi, her great-grandmother on her mum's side of the family. Gigi allowed her to run around her farm with Mark when they spent 5 weeks with her every summer. Mum did not like that. "You've got to keep her where you can see her," Mum said to Gigi when Megan was 13 years old. Mum had come to spend Megan and Mark's last week on the farm with them. "We really need to stop her from acting like a boy before it's too late."
"Don't be so silly, Julie," Gigi said. "I used to run around the farm just like her when I was a child."
But Mum did not care.
"If you don't stop her, I won't let her come to the farm anymore."
So Megan watched as Mark had fun riding around the farm on a horse, while she spent the rest of the week learning how to bake with Gigi.
"Don't worry, Megan," said Gigi. "Do this for now, and next summer you can play on the farm again."
Mum was a little bit Ethiopian, because Gigi's mum was half Ethiopian and a bit African-American, which came from her grandfather, Slim, who married Gigi. Because of this, Mum looks almost white in a family that has proudly gotten lighter with every generation. And then Mum had to ruin it by marrying Chimango, an African man from Malawi. Mum said that she was colourblind and that when she looked at Chimango, she did not see the darkness of his skin. Megan did not understand how Mum could not see Dad's colour when that was all most people saw, including many of Mum's own family, who refused to smile in the wedding photographs. So Megan was part Ethiopian, part African-American, part Malawian, and part English. It was confusing, because really, she was just a complete human being. The girls at school in Newcastle thought Megan was lucky with her skin colour and curly hair, and the boys liked her too. Then, when her body started to grow into the shape of a woman, it did not feel right. It was not what she felt herself to be. Megan thought that maybe she would start to love her body, but she did not. She hated it, and when she was 16, she shaved off all her hair just to see what it felt like. She loved it. She felt free and more like herself. Nobody else liked it. She began to lose people she had thought were friends.
"Why would you do this to yourself?" the girls at school asked her, shocked that she would cut off her heavy curls. "Are you crazy?"
Megan went further. She started to wear men's shoes and decided she liked how powerful they made her feel. At the end of the school year, the other students voted her the ugliest girl in the class. It felt like the whole school was laughing at her. Megan walked out of school that day for the last time and walked straight into a job in McDonald's. From then on, Megan spent her evenings at the harbour with men and women who accepted her just as she was. She was an outsider, just like them, and so she happily took all the drugs they offered her. At first, she only experimented with the drugs, but she soon found herself needing them to be able to get through the day. She slept with men and women as long as they could give her drugs, but she discovered she preferred the women. One night, unable to sleep, Megan made the mistake of searching for her old school friends online. They were all doing well in their lives. Some of them had jobs, real jobs, not working at McDonald's. Some of them were going to university. Some of them were engaged. Some of them were pregnant. They were happy. Happy, happy, happy. After seeing that, Megan knew it was time to make some changes. She decided not to get out of bed and meet her friends at the harbour. She stayed at home and turned off her phone and did her best to ignore her body when it begged her for more drugs. It took 9 days for her body to get used to not having drugs inside it, but when she woke up on day 10, she felt like a new person. She woke up born again. After a fight with her parents on her 18th birthday, Megan moved into a home for teenagers who had nowhere else to go. She had realized that she would never be able to find herself if she continued to live at home with her parents, so she left. When she was alone in her new room, Megan wondered if she should really have been born a man, because she did not feel like a woman. She turned to the internet for answers and found herself in chat rooms with other young outsiders who introduced her to the transgender world. That was where Megan met Bibi, who easily became angry because of Megan's lack of understanding about trans issues. "I thought feminists all hated men," Megan wrote to Bibi after Bibi told her to do some feminist reading. "Of course feminism isn't about hating all men," Bibi wrote back. "It's about equal rights and having the freedom to do what you want. You need to think for yourself for once, Megan. It's time to grow up." Megan already knew it was time to grow up. The whole reason she had left home was to try and find out who she was away from her parents. Megan asked Bibi more questions about feminism and the transgender world. She learned that Bibi had been born a man and was now a woman, but she did not ask questions about it, too scared that she did not know the right way to talk about it. Megan wondered if she should have been born a man instead of a woman. It was a lot to think about, and it made her head hurt. "What about you?" Bibi asked. "How do you identify? As a man, or a woman, or other? There are so many options to choose from." Megan did not know how to answer, so she did not until they finally met for coffee at a cafe one afternoon. "I like the idea of being gender-free and non-binary," Megan told her. "Being born female isn't the problem, and I don't think I want to be a man either. I just want to be free." "I would like these to be gone," Megan said, as she pointed to her breasts. "It would make my life so much better if I didn't have them." They left the cafe and went to Bibi's rented cottage after Bibi told Megan she was welcome to stay. They shared their first kiss on the big double bed and spent the rest of their time together discussing gender as Bibi helped Megan understand her own. "So you won't use she or he pronouns, will you?" asked Bibi. She told Megan there were a lot of gender-free pronouns she could use, like A and E, or his and theirs. But these did not feel right to Megan. In the end, she decided to use they and theirs. "That feels right to me," said Megan. Morgan, no longer Megan, has identified as gender-free for 6 years now.
They are leaning on a wall outside the National Theatre, where they have just watched The Last Amazon of Dahomey, written and directed by Amma Bonsu, the amazing black lesbian theatre director. Morgan does not come to London often. They prefer the north, where the people are nicer and where Bibi is. Morgan misses Bibi. They live a happy, quiet life together, one that involves spending their evenings sitting next to each other on the sofa, reading together. Every other weekend, they visit Gigi and help her with things around the farm. Gigi does not understand Morgan's gender, but she does not care. She still treats them like family. The last time Morgan and Bibi visited, Gigi said she had decided to give the farm to Morgan when she died. "Why should I give the farm to my children?" Gigi asked. "They ran away from the farm as soon as they could. I want it to stay in the family, with you." After they had got over the shock, Morgan thought it was the most exciting thing that had ever happened to them. Family was very important to Gigi. She talked a lot about her own mother, Grace, who had not known her father, a seaman called Welde from Ethiopia. To help Gigi try and find out about her grandfather, Morgan had recently arranged a DNA test for her, so they could try and find any other relatives who were out there. "It was the biggest mystery of Ma's life," Gigi told them. "It upset her that she never knew who her father was." The only thing they knew about Welde was that he disappeared shortly after getting Daisy, Gigi's grandmother, pregnant. Morgan plans on disappearing, just like their great-great-grandfather, from London as soon as possible. They are only there to write a review about the play for a magazine who hired them because they have a lot of followers on social media. Morgan did not intend to become famous on social media. They made their account to talk about their own personal gender journey and being non-binary. Then it became popular, and now they have over 1 million followers who want to know what they have to say. Morgan turns to finally leave when they see someone they recognize. It is that kid from the lecture they gave on being non-binary at a university last year. What is her name again? Morgan remembers her sitting in the front row with a big smile and even bigger hair. "Being trans is personal," Morgan had said, trying to sound confident as they spoke to the students. It had been their first time inside a university. "I include non-binary people, like me, under the trans umbrella, but some people might not." The students stared at them like they had come from the circus, but not her. Yaz, Morgan remembers her name now, had continued to smile at them. "I can only speak for myself," Morgan said. "I'm not the leader for transgender people everywhere. I'm just here to talk about my own personal journey into being non-binary and why I consider myself to be gender-free." Morgan talked for nearly an hour about their experiences of growing up. They discovered that they liked talking to the students. Morgan enjoyed telling them about how they had rejected the ideas about being a girl that their parents had wanted for them, and how good it felt to finally remove their breasts. When they had finished speaking, the students had a lot of questions, especially Yaz. Yaz came to talk to them after the lecture and said, excitedly, that she was thinking of becoming non-binary too. "That's not what being non-binary is about," Morgan told Yaz gently. Yaz made it sound like being non-binary was like choosing which haircut to get. "It's about becoming your true self, despite what society says you should be. You can't decide to be non-binary one day because you like how it sounds. It's about what's inside you and becoming your true self." Yaz was not upset with Morgan for telling her this. She just smiled and invited Morgan to have some coffee with her and her friends in the local cafe. Yaz finally notices them now outside the National Theatre. "Morgan," Yaz says, with that big smile on her face again. "So good to see you again. Have you met my mum? No? Come on, you have to meet her. She's the queen of the old lesbians, and I'm so proud of her tonight. And really happy that she won't spend the rest of tonight complaining that nobody likes her play," Yaz says, with a laugh. "You're not leaving, are you?" Morgan tries to tell her that they are planning on leaving soon, but Yaz pulls them back inside the theatre. "Come on," Yaz tells them. "I need to introduce you to everyone."